we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
This is a battle of worldviews.
And we activate.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here with you today. This is The Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'll be your host for today. Once again, Walker Wildman here with you. Hey, don't forget to watch the show over at streaming.afa.net, streaming.afa.net. You can access that on any browser. Whether you're on a laptop, a tablet device, or your mobile phone, you can go to streaming.afa.net, pull up that webpage there. Log in if you already have an account. If not, you can create a free account. You just need a username and password. A username and password or a valid email and password, and you can be logged in or have created an account in about 2 minutes. Very, very simple, very self-explanatory there at streaming.afa.net. And we are beginning our development of a mobile app there for AFA streaming. So we'll have that launched before the end of the year, an AFA streaming mobile app for your Apple or Android device. We'll have that deployed by the end of the year. So that's an exciting development on that front. And it'll make it a little more compatibility friendly, if you will. By having that mobile app developed. So we're working on that now, and we'll have that launched by the end of the year for Apple on Android devices. That's the AFA streaming app. We're in Psalm chapter 74 today. Psalm chapter 74. I just want to read a couple verses in. This is Asaph here. Oh God, why do you cast us off forever? Why does your anger smoke against the sheep of your pasture? Remember your congregation, which you have purchased of old, which you have redeemed to be the tribe of your heritage. So, really a psalm of distress here. Why do you cast us off forever? And but later on in verse 1, the writer says, why does your anger smoke against the sheep of your pasture? Basically, why does your anger show against your people, God, against your sheep? And so that brings us to, we're the sheep, the Lord is our shepherd as believers. And the role of a shepherd in Bible times, and even today in modern times, this is very much still applicable. The role of a shepherd is one of utmost significance, all right, because back in the Bible days, the days of the Bible, the to have a flock or to have a herd of various types of animals, that was people's livelihood. I mean, that was how they survived, quite literally. That's how they ate. That's how they drank. That's how they, exchanged goods and services, is by having that livestock, that herd. And so the shepherd was the gatekeeper. I mean, the shepherd was the caregiver for the herd. And without the shepherd, things could go downhill very, very quickly. So the Lord is our shepherd. He's our gatekeeper. And he keeps us in his will and in good standing with the Lord. So that's Psalm chapter 74. Two events. One registration is already closed, but we're going to have our Marriage Family Life Conference coming up in just under 4 weeks here in Tupelo, Mississippi. So look forward to seeing everyone that has already registered and is coming to that. Registration has closed, so if you want to come, you have to sign up for next year's event. But our conference is coming up in just about 4 weeks. Look forward to seeing many of you there. But one of our events that still has registration open is AFA at the Ark. I think we're over 100 registrations thus far, and I think the limit's, the cap's about roughly 200. So not much room left, probably right at about 50% capacity for that event, AFA at the Ark. But it's going to be a great day and a half event. All right. We're going to be, we've got rooms there at a local hotel. You can find all of this at afa.net/events, all the hotel details, et cetera, at afa.net/events. But we're going to have some special events there at the hotel, and share some meals together. But we're also going to go, of course, over to the Ark Encounter and have a special tour there. Ken Ham will be speaking with us. I'll be there. My brother Wesley will be there. Will and Mickey Addison will be there. So we'll have a great time at the Ark, AFA at the Ark. Go to afa.net/events and register for that event, and we look forward to seeing you there. Jumping into the stories today, we'll have on my brother Wesley and MD Perkins. The two of them will be on with us in just a little while in the second segment. But one thing I want to talk about while we have a few minutes left in this segment is this climate change narrative. The climate change narrative, it used to be global warming until the globe stopped warming for a short while. So they changed the talking points to climate change, and that's applicable at all times, right? If it's raining, it's climate change. If it's sunshine, it's climate change. If it's snowing, it's climate change. If it's 110 degrees, boy, is it climate change. So it's a win-win-win, all right? From a political and a media narrative standpoint, it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant strategy. I mean, why not make up a narrative and terminology that is applicable at all times of day, at all times of the year, at every day during the month? Climate change, climate change, climate change. That's what they've done. Not Noah in the Bible, but the National Oceanic Atmospheric Association, I believe I have that right, they released these monthly and annual reports on global temperatures, and specifically for the contiguous United States, they released an April report that showed that April, listen to this, folks, next time they say climate change and they say the earth is warming, we're all going to die. This report showed that April 2023 was cooler than April 1895. Not April 1995. April 1895. Yes, you heard me right. Crazy stuff. So April 2023 was cooler than April of 1895. Despite the creation of, you know, the automobile, the airplane, the utilization of oil, the discovery of natural gas. I mean, you can go through all the energy sources that we've not only uncovered the last 100 years, but also utilized at max capacity, with the everybody having their own personal vehicle, airlines just flying planes all across the country, every which way, taking people all over the place. So we're pumping out CO2, and we had a cooler April this year than we did, I don't know, 100-plus years ago. Do the math on that. So don't believe the climate change narrative. And I've never been a fan of climate change. I've never been a fan of the narrative. Never bought into it, always been skeptical of it, definitely don't believe it now. But some people do, and it's very, very disappointing. But on the same note, this is all about control. It's 100% about control. This is not about, quote, saving the planet. These are people that, number one, don't care about the planet. Number two, they don't even believe in a creator. All right, these are pagans. They care about themselves and their interests. They don't care about our planet. From a genuine standpoint, they might claim to, but the only way to have a genuine care for the planet is to understand its creator and the fact that we're called to be good stewards. All right, so there is something to be said about biblical stewardship, being a good steward of that which you've been given purview over, or authority over, just like we're supposed to be good stewards of our finances, to be good stewards of our families, to be good stewards of our jobs, and the list goes on. So stewardship is a good thing. But worldly idolatry is a bad thing, and that's what's going on with climate change. This is worldly idolatry. And it's being used for control. The reason I say it's being used for control is the end goal is no more. Let's just say, just for the sake of discussion, all right, that there is any form of, even the most minute form of legitimacy to the climate change environmentalist narrative. All right, for the sake of discussion, let's say there's an ounce of credibility to the narrative, to the discussion, to the belief system. Where they're wanting to take us leads us to no quote unquote better place than we are now. Because they're wanting us to shift to these solar panels and windmills, which all feed the lithium, the modern, very fascinating technology, lithium battery. All right. So some of these technologies are pretty cool and pretty efficient. I mean, all of our electronics run off these lithium batteries. The lifespan of these lithium batteries is fascinating. But they're acting as if, and they're telling us that lithium batteries and solar panels and windmills are more environmentally sustainable than oil and natural gas and coal. But that's not true at all. It's all about how we define sustainability. They throw that buzzword out, sustainability. What on earth does that mean? They don't define it. And so let's talk about sustainability, all right? When you think about sustainability, you think about, okay, we can do this for a long time, all right? We can utilize this technology or this tool for a long time without really having to go into any extremes or any we're not going to quote-unquote run out of it. You know, they'll say, we're going to run out of oil. No, we're not going to run out of oil. We're sitting on like 100 years of oil under the U.S. That's just what we've discovered, all right? That's not stuff we haven't discovered. 100 years of oil, if not more, that's just under the U.S. But sustainability, that's the buzzword they turn out. But to produce the lithium batteries, which is storing this energy, is a environmentally unfriendly maneuver. And when I say environmentally unfriendly, what I'm talking about is the mining process. The mining process. I'm not saying that mining in and of itself is not environmentally friendly or, you know, all that garbage. I'm just saying that they care they claim to care about the planet, and all these oil fields are destroying the environment, and animals are being flushed out, and they go through all this environmentalist, mumbo jumbo. But then when you go and look at the lithium mining process, it is a disaster from a, you know, geographical and land, management standpoint. They're going in and they're like digging up hundreds and hundreds of acres and basically creating a bunch of big mine holes. And then they're leaving and they're cutting down thousands of trees, destroying thousands of acres with no future plan other than to turn into another lake. So if we want to talk sustainability, how long can we do that? And how much of this is out there? This is uncharted territory, folks. They talk about it like they got it all figured out. You know, we know what we're doing here. We are good to go. When there is a lot of unanswered questions. Like you ask researchers, like, how much oil do we have? And they can give you pretty good numbers. They can say, you know, we're sitting on, you know, 50 years of oil over here, and we got 50 years over here, and you go over to Russia and you got another 100 years. I mean, there's a lot of studies on how much energy we have underneath us when it comes to traditional energy sources. But you start talking about how much lithium and copper and all the other minerals that go into this, you start asking, like, well, how much of that do we have under our feet? Well, a lot of us don't know. They have no idea. So we might be going down this fake climate change path that leads to a bunch of solar panels and windmills and lithium batteries and find out in 20 years that we're about to run out of the minerals. This is the problem with going with unresearched and unproven technologies in the name of climate change.
At At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Oh, Lord, my God, when I in awesome wonder consider all the worlds thy hands have made, I see the stars, I hear the rolling thunder, thy power throughout the universe displayed. Then sings my soul, my Savior God, to thee, how great thou art, how great thou art. Then sings my soul, my Savior God, to thee, how great thou art, how great thou art. When through the world and forest glades I wander and hear the birds.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. You talk about a timeless song there. That was a version of How Great Thou Art, but that original song or that original hymn was written in 1885, so a long, long time ago, but the hymn itself was very much rooted in Scripture and very much applicable today. So that's our song for this Worship Wednesday. Wesley's in studio with us, and he's jotting down notes over there.
You're interrupting me.
Are you working on something?
I'm not ready for you to come to me yet.
Okay.
Are you ciphering?
I'm gonna go to our next guest.
No, I'm kidding.
We'll see you next Wednesday.
already kicked me off. That's one thing that hasn't happened yet, Bobby. I haven't been kicked off the program yet.
You haven't been kicked off in like live.
Live.
Like we've skipped you some Wednesdays.
Oh, yeah.
And without you knowing
when
why.
When you have better stuff, you have better people, you have better everything. So I'm just here when you... Yeah.
You're on the B team.
Yeah, I'm on the B team.
Saying. Okay.
Hey, seriously, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Hey, speaking of the A team, we got MD Perkins in with us, director and producer with American Family Studios. MD, welcome to the show.
Good to be with y'all.
Wes and I like to joke it up a little bit, and hopefully people know we're brothers and aren't going, oh my goodness, these guys are mean to each other.
Do they know they're on live right now?
Yeah. MD, we've talked about this a little bit on Monday. I think Rick talked about it on the show last week a little bit, but we've got tons of great resources that have been produced by American Family Studios, these video resources. We produced a couple documentaries, feature-length documentaries. We're going to be coming out with one hopefully by the end of the year. But not only documentaries, but church resources. And this is June, and much of the world is promoting what they call Pride Month, you know, bragging about sin, promoting sin, flaunting it, you know, in front of consumers around the country. But we've got some resources to really counter that.
Yeah. This is one of the things that we've had the opportunity to work on, of course, are things like In His Image, our documentary dealing with gender and sexuality. And through that project, really, we've had the amazing privilege and opportunity to be connected with a number of great, different ministries out there and people focused in on dealing with a lot of these really pinpoint issues in our culture, particularly the issue of sexuality and gender. And so one of the things that we've just recently developed and we're just now releasing is people might be familiar with AFA Cultural Institute line of video projects that we've done. But for this month, we've got a special edition of that where we are doing something called Practical Ways to Minister to the Sexually Broken. It's a presentation by Stephen Black and Larley Stanlake. And of course, they're great partners of AFA. They have their own ministry, First Stone Ministries, dealing with sexual brokenness issues, homosexuality, transgenderism, sexual addiction, pornography addiction, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. They deal with there in a counseling kind of format there in Oklahoma City. And so, you know, one of the one of the big question points that a lot of people have is, how do I talk to somebody? How do I interact with somebody who has these questions, you know, whether it's a child or a loved one or a friend or whatever? And so really, you know, I mean, In His Image provides a lot of the framework for that. But then we wanted to get in a little more detail with some of the practical ministry advice that they have. And, you know, saying ministry, you don't have to be in professional ministry,
sure,
quote unquote, to be able to be benefited from this resource. This is just an idea that for you as a parent or a friend or a church member or whatever, how do you engage with somebody? How do you work through some of these issues with somebody who has these questions? So that's what this is all about.
You know, one thing that I remember Stephen Black mentioning the last time I was in a room with him and others, and it was at the MFL conference, and that's that there is an abundance of need, let me say it this way: they never have downtime.
Sure.
In their ministry.
Yes.
Okay. They never have downtime, and so if that's true, then backing up further, that means there are countless. And he's not the only one. Now, he's had a great partnership with us, and we work with him, but he also has opened up our doors to other individuals and ministries who are doing the same work he's doing. And they are constantly ministering. There is no downtime. And so that would mean that there are thousands of those that were currently or in the process of transitioning out of the LGBTQ lifestyle as a result of experiencing it and realizing the damaging effect, both from a spiritual standpoint and the depression side of things, but also physically, as we talk about the transgender issues becoming more and more.
Yeah.
So, what have you seen in your ministry, or as you've studied this topic of being able to distinguish, as we're talking about this topic, between the individual and the agenda that's taking place? Because for 15 years, they've been merged together, and if you don't support one or the other, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's
it's all or nothing.
Yeah, but we're talking about ministry here.
Yeah, and that's really where a lot of the controversy comes in, because people see them as united.
That's right.
And when you're interacting with an individual or a loved one or someone close to you in an interpersonal relationship, of course, some of the things that you will say, your approach, the things that you're going to bring up right away are going to be different than I need to stand up and boldly proclaim the truth on this issue because this is affecting society, this is affecting education, corporate policy, structures, and all that. So, you know, part of it is just acknowledging that there is a distinction there. Instead of acting like, you know, our standing up and speaking out against Target is the same way that we approach somebody who comes to you and they say, I'm struggling with this.
Yeah.
You know, and so that,
or maybe as you starting the conversation with someone too, either way, whether you're starting it with them because you know they're trapped in it or whether they come to you, it's still significantly different than it would be.
Yeah. And one thing I want to say here, by the way, we're talking to MD Perkins, director and producer over at American Family Studios, about two video resources we have available. Of course, you can go over to resources.afa.net. That's resources.afa.net. If you want the physical copy, if you want the DVD of this bundle, we can do that over at resources.afa.net. But also on our streaming platform at streaming.afa.net, we have the two videos there as well. The first one is Practical Ways to Minister to the Sexually Broken, and then the second one is The Theological Error of Gay Christianity. But MD, I wanted to, along the same lines that Wesley's talking about the agenda and the individual, I think what makes this, by the way, I would say, I think it's fair to say that this is the issue of our time, of our day, at least us right here in this room. I think the pro-life issue is up there with it as well, at least in America. But I don't know of a movement, a political and ideological movement that has been this popular that promotes what you could simply say is bad behavior or sin at such a broad level with such no shame, absolutely no shame, no hesitation. You can talk about other sins, adultery, lying, cheating, and you can do a litany, you know, blasphemy. But this one's a sin as far as the issue of homosexuality and transgenderism, but it's being flaunted by the most powerful people and institutions in the world.
Well, sure, and the whole agenda is to remove shame, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, even the calling it Pride Month is saying, I am proud of this. This is nothing to be ashamed of. This is something that you celebrate. It's just an aspect of human diversity. And so that's what this is all about. And so, yeah, I mean, there is a demonic, you know, spiritual warfare component underneath this. Like, you see, obviously, the policy agendas and all of these things getting worked out in society. But there is a spiritual enemy that is seeking to enslave people individually within this mindset, and to denigrate the Christian proclamation of truth and the Christian understanding of mankind, sin, salvation, you know, the family. All of those kind of things are under attack. And that's why there's a fundamental opposition between the LGBTQ movement and the Christian faith. And what I call gay Christianity is just that attempt to reconcile those two competing ideologies and really competing religions at this point, you could even say, because they both contain their own visions of, you know, creation, fall, salvation.
Doctrine.
Yeah, all basically of those things are kind of encapsulated within each of those movements. And so that's part of why we've produce this resource and are trying to speak about it.
You know, I do think while the church has had its either blinders on or whatever, or they haven't handled this issue the best over the last couple of years, 10 or 15 years, I do think that there was a strategy. Well, I don't think. I know there was a strategy that took place in the mixed matching of the language early on. Yeah. And so that did silence and mislead a lot of Christians in the merging of the individual and the agenda, and it caused us to be quiet for so long. I do believe, though, that there's a growing education, or really just experience, that it is possible to do both, to love the sinner, and to in that way, and that we can unpack that in a lot of ways, but just simply loving the sinner and saying no to putting drag queens in libraries, public libraries. You can do that. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so, in the book that you've written, what have you concluded that as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So much of it does boil down to that issue of language. Like, part of what you're talking about is the way that the definition of the word love has been reconfigured
to now mean
acceptance and affirmation.
Affirmation,
and showing solidarity with somebody.
No matter what.
Yeah, no matter what. Yeah, it's
at all cost.
It's completely that. Whereas, you know, the Christian view of love is laying down your life, serving somebody, even, you know, in 1 Corinthians 13, you know,
verse
even
six.
Speaking the truth is recognized as part of an aspect of love, you know? And so there's a lot more to what it means to love your neighbor than just affirming what your neighbor says or what they believe or what they're promoting.
Yeah. You know, folks, we're promoting these resources. And, of course, MD is also author of the book, Dangerous Affirmations, the threat of the danger of quote unquote gay Christianity, which addresses this within the church extensively as far as the history there. But we're promoting these products because, yes, as Wesley said, it's great that Stephen Black and Larlee Stanlake and countless others are addressing this from a organizational or an institutional standpoint. But we want you, the Christian, when you run into this in your family, folks, we've got this sin and this issue is all around us. All right, we want you to be able to speak truth to the issue and do so in at least the most knowledgeable way possible.
Yeah, and obviously we want to be prepared for the one who is trapped in it, but there's also those that are not trapped in the actual lifestyle but are theologically in support of it.
Yes.
And so we want to be equipped in both cases as well. And the resources we've done produced over the last couple of years have done that as well. Remind us of the two specific name ones, Walker, and where they can find them.
Yeah, right now we're talking about two video resources that are bundled together in a DVD form called Practical Ways to Minister to the Sexually Broken with Stephen Black and
Larlee
Stanlake.
That one's brand new.
Yeah, this is a new product. MD, the second one, tell us about the second video about gay Christianity.
The second one is also new. It's Stephen and I sitting down for an extended conversation on these issues of gay Christianity. Yes, I've written a book on this.
Sure.
So, you know, you might think, well, I've already heard about that. Well, it's approaching it in a slightly more conversational form and also getting a lot of Stephen's insights on this because he's been involved in this ministry for a long time. And you may think, well, what does ministering to the sexually broken have to do with the theological danger? But, you know, if you've looked at this at all, you know that those who are most susceptible to the lies of gay Christianity and gay Christian theology are those who are trying to minister, or they're trying to show love, or they have somebody in their lives who's come out as gay or transgender. And so they're much more likely to capitulate, to compromise, to shift somehow on these issues. And so we're trying to talk about what are the deceptions underneath that? What are some of the language issues that are there?
Yeah, and, be aware of.
Yeah, exactly. So that people can decipher the lies and understand what is the truth actually behind this, and what does God's word say about it? So that's what that video is.
And the last thing I'll say, MD, to this, you know, this whole topic of ministering to people that are either struggling with this issue personally or are just struggling through it mentally and theologically in their own heart, that the reality is that we won't be able to convert everyone. I think that's really what the reality that every Christian needs to understand as they're struggling with. Well, you know, this person's not hearing me out. Are they calling me a hater? Or they say that that's not loving for me to speak the truth. The reality is, MD, is that not everyone will convert. Not everyone will come onto our side on this issue.
And ultimately, that's not our responsibility either.
Correct.
And that's the bottom line, too. The Holy Spirit's responsible for that. God's at work. Our job is to be obedient to His what He's called us to do, speak truth and love, but do so in a way that we leave the results up to Him.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Hey, MD, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
hey,
Wes.
Hey, I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Absolutely. Hey, folks, you can check out these resources in two places. We've got the video on demand at streaming.afa.net. Both of those videos are listed as free on there. All you got to do is have an account. And then you can go over to resources.afa.net if you want to order the physical DVD. We'll see you in a few minutes.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to the program here on American Family Radio. We had on MD Perkins and my brother Wesley in studio with us last segment. Great interview on this, what they call Pride Month, or the LGBTQ, now they've added about 10 other letters, movement, and what the Christian response is. We've got some resources available for you at streaming.afa.net or on our resource center at resources.afa.net. Well, I do want to introduce our next guest that we have on for the program, Representative Jamie Keel. He's from Alabama, and he's been a great ally for the Christian conservative movement and different policy changes that can be taking place in Alabama and around the country. Representative Keel, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, Representative, tell our audience a little bit about yourself, what district you represent there in Alabama, and then we'll jump into some of these some of this legislation you've been working on.
Sure. I'm a second-term representative from Northwest Alabama. I live in Russellville. And it's House District 18, and I've enjoyed my service the last 5 years. This is my fifth legislative session, and so it's been a real learning experience, and I've enjoyed being able to serve the people.
Let me ask you this, Representative: Alabama is, of course, a neighboring state to Mississippi, where we're from here. So I know I'm relatively familiar with Alabama, broadly speaking, but politically speaking, what is Alabama? Is Alabama conservative? Is Alabama more moderate? What's the makeup there legislatively and with the governor?
I would consider Alabama a very conservative state. We were very much for President Trump very early, and we have a fairly conservative state house. Our governor is one of the most conservative governors in the union. And typically when we send her, legislation that is conservative, she typically signs that. And so we are a very conservative state.
Representative, you introduced and helped sponsor one of the a pro-life tax credit bill that we've been working on in various states around the country. With my colleague, Dr. Jamison Taylor. Tell us a little bit about this bill, House Bill 208, what it's kind of the backgrounder here and what it would have done should it have been signed by the governor.
Well, the Pregnancy Resource Act comes from what we did in Alabama in 2019, which was passed, in my opinion, the most strict abortion, anti-abortion bill in the country. And we did that in preparation of Roe v. Wade being overturned, which, of course, it subsequently was. And so that put our bill in effect, which basically bans any abortion unless it is deemed, quote, medically necessary. And so if it's the mother, if her life is in danger, then it would be permissible. Otherwise, pretty much all abortions in Alabama are banned. And so from that, there is hopefully a very positive effect of having many new babies born in Alabama. Mm. And so because of that, we'll have many new moms, many new babies with a lot of needs. And so my view is that the state, and I use this word in a very positive way, the state caused this issue that we have with all the new moms and babies. And so I, in my view, the state should help take care of the moms and babies that we have helped to create here. And so this bill would have allowed the taxpayer to qualify for a tax credit, which is the highest tax incentive for a person to give. Mm-hmm. And any money given to a pregnancy crisis center, they would have gained a tax credit against up to half of their tax liability. And we fashioned this after the Mississippi law that has been successful, and they are moving their cap to $10 million. And so ours would have been $10 million if it had been allowed to pass.
Representative, this seems like a no-brainer. This is one of those bills where you introduce it and you're like, man, we're going to get 100% support. Everybody's going to be clamoring over this. But you got other tax credits that there's various tax credits out there. And some of them have nothing to do with the core interest and the core purpose of government. And I could get into these environmental mumbo jumbo tax credits, buy a Tesla and we'll give you, your money back, basically. And it's sure. This ridiculous collusion between the government and the private sector, for-profit businesses, by the way, not ministries, not organizations, not nonprofits. But here we have this pro-life tax credit bill that helps really encourage adoption, encourage foster, but not only that, encourage donating to pro-life pregnancy resource centers, and you didn't have for various reasons weren't able to get this thing through the legislature. Was it because there was opposition in Alabama, or was this more for logistical purposes?
Well, we have a bicameral legislative body in Alabama, much like Congress. We have a House of Representatives and a Senate, and we were able to pass it through the House of Representatives. I got it through committee and through off the House floor. The issue in Alabama is in our legislative session that just ended last night was there were multiple, and I mean there were multiple tax credits and income tax cuts proposed, and only a few made it through. We do have record education budgets, and all income tax goes to education in Alabama. And so we had record budgets this year, but we also had record requests for tax credits and income tax cuts. For instance, we started the cut of the grocery tax, which we have in Alabama. Very few states have that. And so we started cutting the grocery tax. We cut income tax on overtime wages. So we cut a lot of taxes. This is one that just didn't make it through the committee process in the Senate.
Let me ask you this, Representative. Once again, we're talking to Representative Jamie Kill. He's from Alabama, Northwest Alabama, Russellville area. Do you think we can get this through next session, next year?
Well, I'm hopeful that we can. I think by next session, we will have a better idea of what the economy is going to do. Our budgets in Alabama were up again this year. We had record budgets for fifth straight year. Part of that was fueled by the COVID money that was blown out by the federal government. And so we had that type thing that affected our economy. We should have a better grasp on what our economy is going to do long term after this year. And so we've already seen a slowdown. Our tax collections have slowed down. And so we probably do need a year to figure out what the effect is going to be on our education budget before we implement more taxes. But I'm bringing it back next year. Very hopeful that it will pass. I was attacked on the House floor by Democrats. I had an onslaught of a filibuster there. you know, from the typical pro-abortion people who just can't understand why we're trying to save babies.
Wow. Surprising, but not surprising, even in a state like Alabama. I think every state has a certain level of forces that are working against life, working against conservative Christian values. Representative, let me ask you this, and then we'll let you go here in about a minute or two. But what are some other bills that maybe did pass the state legislature in Alabama that you were a part of, worked on in some fashion that would make some of our listeners proud?
Well, you know, last year we passed a very important legislation, and it goes with what you've been discussing on your show today. We call it VCAP, the Vulnerable Child Compassion and Protection Act, which banned and made it a felony for doctors to perform gender-altering treatments and surgeries on children. So think things like castration and vasectomies and hysterectomies and things that would alter the way God made a child before they're old enough to make those decisions for themselves. And so I was very, very proud that we were able to pass that last year. The governor signed it, and you know, we're just trying to protect the children from that onslaught of the sexualization of our kids. And that's what's happening in society.
Representative, let me ask you this last question. I know I sound like a Southern Baptist preacher on my third point an hour later.
I'm Southern Baptist.
Me too.
I'm used to it.
Yeah, I can make jokes on my own. Hey, on the FBI headquarters or the FBI training facility there, I believe in the Huntsville area that's in the works at least. Is the Biden administration, can you speak to that at all as far as the Biden administration holding hostage this FBI training facility project in Alabama because of Alabama's conservative values?
Well, I haven't heard so much about the FBI training facility as I have Space Force. Space Force was scheduled to be moved from Colorado to Alabama, to Huntsville, and President Trump had put that in motion. We have the federal employees already here. We have the infrastructure with NASA and all the rocket building that we already have, the defense contractors. We already have all that in place in Alabama. And that is a very real issue for us. We think that we are absolutely being held up from gaining Space Force in Alabama from Colorado because of that very issue. And so we strongly oppose the Biden administration's move to keep that in Colorado. And we do think if a fair look is given to that issue, that we will absolutely be the top scorer if we were scored in that contest.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm not from Alabama, but I'm very familiar with that Huntsville area and the lot of the federal contractors there in the defense sector. Makes complete sense from a strategic standpoint. But, you know, Representative, if this were the Trump administration and they were holding back some kind of project like this because they didn't like the politics of the state, I mean, the left-wing media would be going crazy. You're costing people jobs. You're making them, you know, suffer because of your petty politics. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but this wouldn't be, this would be widely criticized by the left if this were Trump.
Yeah, if there was an administration like the Trump administration and they came in and said, you can't build solar panels in New York, they would lose their minds.
Yeah.
But, or battery plants or whatever it is that the Green New Deal is proposing. But when we try to move Space Force to Alabama, where we already have everything in place to house them, I mean, we have federal employees everywhere because of FBI, because of the Space Center, because of NASA, because of defense contractors. I mean, we're sending folks to the moon and beyond. And we already have all that in place in Alabama to do that. And it is ridiculous that some woke agenda is causing us to potentially lose that opportunity.
Yeah, very good point there. And not only making Alabama lose the opportunity, but what kind of setbacks are we facing from a military standpoint, you know, squabbling over whether it's going to go to Alabama or not. Meanwhile, China's, you know, launching all kind of satellites and advancing on us from a space standpoint and a strategic standpoint. Hey, Representative, thanks so much for coming on the program, and I appreciate your work over there.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. That's Representative Jamie Keel. He's from Northwest Alabama, from the Russellville area. He was the lead sponsor for the pro-life tax credit bill there in Alabama that passed the committee, passed the House of Representatives, and just couldn't make it through the Senate over there for various reasons. But he said he's going to keep bringing that bill up in the next session and hopefully get that bill through the finish line. Hey, I came across this last story, kind of tying back into the first segment here. This was out of Breitbart, but it's citing another news source about these Ford F-150 trucks called the Lightning trucks. That's the name of them. They're the new electric trucks from Ford that they're pumping out. Listen to this. This report kind of looks into the capacity of the batteries on these F-150s, and the load is let's see, this was a study done with about 1400 pounds of cargo, which says it's about 110 pounds short of the gross weight rating of the truck, so basically near capacity as far as hauling capacity, which that's actually not very much. But nonetheless, it talks about how the distance that these new trucks can drive when you actually put a load on them. I mean, put a trailer with an ATV or anything, a U-Haul trailer, whatever you're pulling with these F-150s, you hook any type of load to it, the distance drops substantially on these loads and how far they can go. I think it was dropped. The distance dropped by like a third or a quarter when hooking a load to it. Basically, it goes from 278 miles distance on a full battery without a payload, which, folks, that is not far at all. That is not far at all for a major pickup truck in America. 278 miles? I mean, I'm filling up cars, you know, that got, when I top it off, it says I've got 580 miles till empty. So 278 miles without a payload, with nothing, no hauling anything. But you hook a trailer to it, folks, 210 miles. You lose about 70 miles per charge by just hooking up some type of payload, 1,400 pounds, it says, to this F-150. So, once again, to say that this electric vehicle technology is a proven technology, we've got it all figured out, it's better for the consumer, they say, it's better for you, that is a complete hoax. And anybody that says that, especially a corporation, folks, they're opening themselves up to consumer fraud and false advertising. Electric vehicles are not at the point that they are better for the consumer than traditional combustion engines. We'll be back next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.